There is ample biomass availability on a sustainable and renewable basis to support a project of up to 200 tons per day of wood biomass. Two, the preferred technology for this project is fast pyrolysis, which would convert woody biomass into two main products, liquid bio oil and solid char. Three, both the bio oil and char suitable renewable energy products for industrial and commercial users, such as taconite plants, the electric power generation, bio may also be refined into a higher value fuels and chemicals. A 200-ton facility would produce approximately 8 million gallons of biofuel and 12,000 tons of char per year. It would create 100 short-term construction jobs and 35 long-term jobs, plus create additional markets and job opportunities for area loggers. In conclusion, successful development of the demonstration feasibility or the facility would lead to a development of commercial scale facility once crude oil prices increase to $100 per barrel. Boyce Fort would also seek federal funding and to support this and anticipate a 50% of the funding could come from federal sources with an equal participation from the state. Thank you, Mr. Chair members.
Any questions on Mr. Johnson or Representative Hill? Representative Mahoney.
Well, I just want, Mr. Chair, I just wanted you to know that I was presented this study about a month ago, I think it was, and read it, and I think this is a pretty good idea for northern Minnesota if we can figure out a way to do it.
Very similar to Representative Eakin's bill, too. Okay, so Representative Hawes removes his motion at House File 1139. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Dill, can you tell me how much the entire project will cost? I'm sorry if I missed that earlier.
Representative Dill.
I didn't hear what
the entire, the total cost of the package.
If we do, Mr. Johnson. Chair, Representative Anderson, if we do just a scale model, it would be $7 million. If we were to go into the 200-ton production level, we would be talking $29 million, again, a shared partnership between the band, the federal government, the state of Minnesota, and possibly the Department of Energy and Conservation.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Johnson, can you tell me, are these equal shares? I mean, what are we talking about here?
I cannot answer that, Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson. It will be a negotiated thing. There also may be some of the new federal dollar stimulus monies that can go into this as well. Our first job was to satisfy the legislative mandate that we complete the feasibility study. We have done that and submitted it to the appropriate chairs and to the leadership. And now this is the second phase that will probably take us into next year when we do the bonding bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Further questions then? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Bill. Representative Clark. House File 1634, and I'd like to welcome the Somali Day on the Hill, so welcome to the Somali community for being here, and who are all of the folks in the vet? Well, welcome them too. Where, can somebody tell me where what's going on? Yes.
I'm Louis King from Academy OIC.
Yes, Louis.
And these are the 100 Hard Hats Construction Training Course, and we're here today in support of the Western Bureau and Western State.
Okay, good. Welcome. Okay, so Representative Clark moves that House File 1634 be recommended to pass. And Representative Clark, are we keeping this in our committee or...
No.
Is this a bonding proposal?
This is a bonding
and proposal. And be referred to finance. Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a bill that would provide bonds so that we could create an African-American history museum in Minneapolis. It would be located in South Minneapolis, and I'm really proud to bring this bill before you, Mr. Chairman. It has the opportunity to create an institution we don't yet have in Minnesota, and I'd like to ask Ms. Roxanne Gibbons to give some testimony about the bill and how it would work, and it would be publicly owned, and we're asking for $625,000.
Welcome to the committee. Just identify yourself when you...
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Roxanne Gibbons. I'm representing the Minnesota African American History Museum and Cultural Center. It's actually not only a pleasure, but I'm very excited to be here to talk about something that's near and dear to our communities across the Twin Cities. That African Americans have lived and worked in Minnesota for more than 200 years. And believe it or not, they've contributed to the Minnesota landscape in ways that the Minnesota African Museum will make come alive. And why that's important is because sharing Minnesota's African American legacy, it presents a tremendous opportunity toward creating an inclusive community. But beyond that, its history, its education, its community, and its leadership. And all those elements are very important to enriching our community. This museum happens to be located, obviously, in Representative Clark's area, along with Hayden and Champion. We are located in one of the city's most economically and racially diverse areas in the city of Minneapolis. That's the Stevens Square area. We're very excited that it is. We are going to be located there because we feel that we will be representing entire communities. Also, it offers a wonderful opportunity for state tourism because there has really been no opportunity to have African Americans on the tourist agenda for state tourism. This is the beginning point. And believe it or not, Minnesota is one of six states that does not have an African-American museum. I mean, even Cedar Rapids, Iowa, has an African-American museum, okay? So I guess it's just come of our time. We are located at 1700, like I said, 3rd Avenue. It is the beginning of the Arts Corridor. We are located south of the Convention Center. We start with the museum, then we go on to Hennepin Museum, then we go on to MIA, and onto the Children's Theater. So it represents just a wonderful, wonderful swing. We'll have trolleys and all sorts of things that are going to make this very accessible. We are a 501c3. Our 501c3 status is in progress as we speak. And during the interim, we have the Minneapolis Community Action Agency, in which I believe Bill Davis is here representing that agency. They're acting as our fiscal agent until such time as we get our complete status. We are also going to be offering, it's going to be a education focus. It's going to be an interactive museum with a variety of exhibit halls. And we are going to have a technology center. The teachers from all across the state will be able to use our facility as a resource. The museum is looking to a total of 6.5. We're almost halfway there. We are asking today for $625,000 to complete and make this actually a reality. And I have various members throughout that can speak in support of the concept, if you so wish.
Thank you very much. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just wondering, on all of these proposals when folks come up today on the different bills, if every group could say the total cost of their project, if there is if there are local dollars that will be matched for state dollars, mm-hmm. and if so, how much? And then I do have one question for Representative Clark.
Go ahead.
Is that something that we could
do? I think the rest of our bills are
a different one.
Except mine, I think, is the only one, and I can tell you what's the total cost.
Okay, great. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Clark, have you been in contact with, is it Commissioner Nina Archibald? I don't know if I'm saying her name right. For the Historical Society at all, have you talked to them to see if, you know, is this in the works? Already, is this something that they, are we duplicating efforts, or what is, have you had conversations with her?
We're not duplicating efforts, but I will defer to Ms. Givens to talk a bit more about that. I did yesterday again talk with Ms. Kelleher. This is a historically significant building, so hopefully there will be some contributions in that regard too.
Ms. Givens?
Yes, I'd like to address that very briefly. I have been in meetings with Ms. Archibald and her staff, fully aware of this oncoming, very supportive of it. As a matter of fact, we're looking to work collaboratively. They do have some artifacts that are in their archives that we hope to be able to resurrect and present as a rotating exhibit within our space. So there are all sorts of wonderful opportunities, but this is actually the only initiative that has ever been introduced that is exclusively devoted to African American history and young people. Now we do have, you know, Native American history. We've got the Swedish Museum, we've got the Russian Museum, we go on and on and on. But this is the only initiative. And we hope to continue to work very closely with the Minnesota Historical Society.
And Mr. Chair?
Well,
can you tell me again what the total project cost, what the total project cost is, and then what the local match will be for it?
Representative Clark, or
so the total is $6.5 million in the capital campaign, and then I think those dollars. Do you want to go through the rest of them?
Right, 2.5 of that is represents endowments, and we know in this marketplace we don't know if we're going to be able to be successful with that. But most of this is capital grants. So the $625,000 that we're asking for today reflects the actual restoration and complete facilitation of the facility. Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Clark, how long has this been in the planning stage? And then, secondly, is this the first time it's been requested?
Ms. Gibbons, do you want to handle that? Or sure. This is the very first time. It's brand new. We've been under the radar screen. We just now, let me explain that this property is an existing property. It is an old historic mansion that is called the Cole Mansion, and it is on the National Historic Registry, has been since 1980. It has had only four owners, and we will become the fifth owner of this property. So it is 8,500 square feet. It has cold space for archivals. It has a secret tunnel that we will be
aware.
Really, it's the most incredible thing. So the secret tunnel goes to the house next door, which was either a hospital or a funeral home. We don't know yet, okay? But you can imagine the bodies up. No. But anyway, it does. So it just offers a phenomenal opportunity for education. It has the original coal suit, and so we'll be teaching the young kids about how utilities were used back in those days and why everybody suffered from all this lung disease, because that's what we used as a heating source. So everything about this existing facility is going to be a learning opportunity. Okay. Oh, it's been in the works. We closed the property on December 18th, 2008. We've been working on it since, I would say, probably about August, a fast track from through the city approval. I've been in the development industry for over 25 years, and I've never seen anything go so fast. And that's because everybody is embracing this concept. So we're really, really excited and encouraged.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could you provide at a later time in writing your plan for operational expenses?
Yes, and we do have that, but we just did not include that at this go-around, but we certainly will.
Okay, and Representative Haas,
where's the operation money going to be coming from? Could you help me with that?
Yes, we are.
The operational, Mr.
Go ahead,
Madam.
We are engaged in a capital campaign currently under the radar, but we are negotiating with foundations such as General Mills, Travelers, so we're hoping to get initial dollars for that, and then we'll start our capital campaign, and we'll go on sustaining from that point on.
And Representative Haas, I think Ms. Gibbons said they were looking for an endowment too. So
right, the endowment, the $2.5 million endowment, which we hope to.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you.
Further questions? If not, then Representative Clark renews her motion that House Bill 1634 be recommended to pass. We refer to finance and then capital bonding finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion as well. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Mahoney and the mayor. Representative Mahoney moves that House Bill 1263 be recommended to pass. And Representative Mahoney, it's your intention to remove...
Mr. Chair, I believe staff has some wording as an amendment that will remove some wording. Ms. Novak?
Ms. Novak.
Mr. Chair, I believe the intention is to move to delete sections 2 and 3 of House Bill 1263 and to add an effective date after page 4, line 15, add an effective date that says this section is effective the day after the City of St. Paul issues up to $40 million in bonds for a community ICE facility as authorized in law.
Members, does everyone understand that lengthy oral amendment?
Prior to that, I should move the bill, Mr. Chair.
Yes, we'll do that. I believe I did have you move the bill.
Okay,
you were coming up.
Thank you.
So, Representative Mahoney then offers the oral amendment and removes delete section 2, section 3, and the oral amendment regarding the effective date. All those in favor signify by...
Mr. Chair, can you just repeat it one more time?
Okay. Go ahead, Ms. Novak.
Mr. Chair and members, the amendment is on page 4, after line 15, insert effective date. This section is effective the day after the City of St. Paul issues up to $40 million in bonds for a community ICE facility, comma, as authorized in law.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Mahoney.
The reason we're offering that particular amendment is that there's a separate bill traveling through another committee that deals with that tax issue, and the tax committee wishes to see it. So this deals with... that leaves the bill the ability to stay in your committee and not have to move anywhere else. So I'd like to move that it be laid over for possible inclusion on the bill.
Okay. So Representative Mahoney had initially moved that the bill be passed and just laid over for possible inclusion, and now as amended. Go ahead, Representative Mahoney. Or Mia.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I...
Representative Anderson, did you have one more question?
I'll wait until after
okay.
You can.
Mr. Chair, committee members, I wanted to... before I get started, I wanted to thank the people who have come here to help support this particular bill. Obviously, the mayor of the City of St. Paul, the Carpenters, the City Carpenters Union, Capital City Partnership, St. Paul Port Authority, River Center Convention Center, River Center Convention and Visitor Center, Councilman Dave Thune, St. Paul Chamber is here, and many other letters of support are in your packet. This bill today authorizes the City of St. Paul to redirect the remainder of the loan after the next 4 years, which is currently being paid off to the state, to use them to expand our Minnesota Event Center, event district, which will bring jobs and revenue to the City of St. Paul. We have several centers down there, the Ordway, the St. Paul Science Museum, the River Center, and the Excel, and this will be another piece to that particular center or district. There are two important issues in this bill. The Excel Arena was paid for in part from a loan from the state and not a grant, which many other jurisdictions we've done for. This agreement was unprecedented, and it really should have been a grant. Over the past 25 years, there's been regional centers, regional facilities from northern Minnesota to southern Minnesota, from west to east, that have received bonding dollars rather than loans. And the City of St. Paul is committed to reinvesting this money to expand our downtown, to expand the economic vitality of our downtown, and we already bring, I think it is half a million visitors with the X?
4.5
million? And this will bring another quarter of a million people per year to our downtown, creating jobs in the entertainment, restaurant area. It will provide more ice time for the high school and the local areas, local hockey teams that need indoor practice time, as we all saw in this committee a couple days ago, seems like forever ago, from Big Lake coming down to talk about how they have to drive till 2 o'clock in the morning. There's always a need for more ice time in the state of hockey, Mr. Chair. I could go on and on. It's a great project. it really does finish off our downtown in this area, but I think I'll leave something for the mayor to say.
Mayor, welcome to the castle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I am Chris Pullman, mayor of the city of St. Paul, and I appreciate getting the opportunity here to talk a little bit about this project with you. I'd also like to thank Representative Mahoney for his leadership on this. As you know, we have been before the committee in past years talking about the importance of the request before you. What has changed over the interim is the progress we've made with respect to this proposal and what we can get in the ground if the bill in fact passes. I can't say enough about the importance of the event district, Minnesota's event district, and how important it is to the state economy. Certainly is important to the city of St. Paul's economy this time of year more than ever. At turning time, my apologies to the chair for the loss last night. They'll do better next year, I'm sure. They had a tough draw, Mr. Chair.
Yeah,
that's not
did.
Quite fair. But we do.
Give them a Kleenex.
We do see that at turning time how incredibly important this event district is to people from across the state of Minnesota. If you're not familiar with what we consider the event district, there is a map of the district in your handout. The event district generates over $200 million a year in revenue with 4.5 million visitors annually. It's tourists that might come for the U.S. Figure Skating Championships, or maybe a season ticket holder to the opera, or maybe someone that has a regular membership at the Science Museum, or maybe somebody coming to an event directly at the Xcel Energy Center. And if any given night in the district, you can attend an exhibit at the Science Museum, you can go to a musical at the Ordway, or you can see Roller Girls at the Roy Wilkins Auditorium. The event district employs over 1,000 people, and it's going strong. Despite the success of the district, we know that it can be even stronger. The pond has been a vision for the community for several years now. The development will continue building the momentum of the event district as a regional and national destination. But the pond will be a community ice facility incorporating youth, amateur, and professional sports activities. It will be publicly built and owned by the City of St. Paul, and it will operate year-round. The immediate impact will be 200 construction jobs. The city owns the land, and we can start moving dirt as soon as financing is in place. As the market rebounds, there will also be private development that can happen at the site, and quite frankly, will be spurred by this development. This initiative meets every goal set by the legislature and by the president. It creates jobs, it's shovel-ready, and it's good for our economic future. What we're asking of you is to allow St. Paul to use its resources better, in a stronger way that will help create the jobs and have an immediate impact as well as a long-term impact on the region, on our city, and on the event district. This is exactly what the city needs to be doing in tough economic times to move forward, finding new ways to responsibly raise and grow the tax base. I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you about this, and I just for the record, I want to just kind of set this exactly what it is that we're looking at here. This was the St. Paul, originally in 1998, this was passed when the facility was owned at the St. Paul River Center Arena, and this the legislation before you brings us back to that bill. At the time, I think Representative Mahoney has outlined much of this, but $65 million was appropriated from the general fund for a loan to the City of St. Paul. $17 million of that loan was immediately forgiven, leaving $48 million to be paid back to the state. Since then, the City of St. Paul has repaid $8.5 million of that loan. The bill before you requires the city to continue to make its payments for four additional years through fiscal year 2013, and then the loan would be forgiven. Section 2 of the bill authorizes the city to issue local bonds to then pay for community ice facility. That's the part that was amended.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. And the effective date is changed.
The effective date is changed. Again, the purpose of this language is to help the city move forward on this project and continue to grow the importance of the event district. And with that, I stand for questions.
Questions of the mayor, Representative Briner. Representative Anderson, excuse me, go ahead. Representative Anderson first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe if research staff could refresh my memory, wasn't it $65 million was the total for this project and that the state basically put up the $65 million but only required $48 million of it to be part of the loan? Is that correct?
Ms. Novak.
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, the total appropriation as presented in the bill was for $65 million and the loan was for $48 million.
Thank you. And Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney and Mayor, if I'm remembering correctly, you guys weren't here at that time, were you? Were you at the legislature in 98?
Only a couple people in the room that were here at that time.
Okay. Well, Representative Mahoney and Mayor, I was here as a staffer at that time, and I remember very vividly promises from St. Paul that this was going to be a loan, that they would pay back. And that was the promise made to every single legislator here and to the entire state of Minnesota, that this is a loan, yep, we're going to pay it back. And here we are, 10 years, 11 years later, and you're saying, no, we want this forgiven.
Representative Mahoney or Mayor?
Well, Mr. Chair, I can make a very long argument, or I can make a relatively short argument.
Go with the short one.
The short one is
waiting for another bill.
There's a matter of equity. Multiple other jurisdictions have had significantly larger amounts of help in percentage-wise with their local facilities. We are one of the only cities that have had to take out this size of a loan to do our event center. So it's a matter of equity, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, well, Representative Mahoney, if we're going to talk equity, I'd like you to meet the constituents of Plymouth and the fact that they put up their own ice arena with their own property tax dollars. Didn't come to the state looking for a loan. Didn't promise that they were going to pay a loan back and then not deliver on that promise. So don't go down the road of equity, because you're talking to the wrong person on that one.
Well,
Representative Mahoney,
Mr. Chair,
start the tit for tat here. Go ahead.
I'm not going to tit for tat on this one, Mr. Chair. This is St. Paul is the capital city. The event center ties into a major sports facility, a major event center, and it's. Is a better way for our governor to not have to drive so far to go play hockey.
He's not that good anyway, but Mayor, if you like to weigh in on this at all?
On the governor's hockey ability? No, I will pass on that, Mr. Chair, if I could, but I would ask you to consider that this is a regional destination, a regional draw. Again, you know, we can go down the street today and see the thousands of people that are coming from the state of Minnesota that really do enjoy the opportunity to come to this facility, and we believe that this would be a good expansion of it. There were a lot of factors that went into the decisions that were made, I suspect, back in 1998 to get that facility built. But in that same time, other facilities across the state of Minnesota were receiving direct aid, not a loan support to build their facilities, and they include multiple cities across the state of Minnesota. So there is, we do think that we also think that circumstances have changed. And this is a good opportunity to continue the expansion of the district, get people back to work, and expand the tax base in the city of St. Paul.
Representative Donnie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maybe a question more for the mayor. So if we don't do this, what is the city of St. Paul's ability to continue to make payments on the existing loan?
Mr. Chair, Representative, we will continue to make the payments on the loan. Even under this proposal, we will continue to make payments for an additional 4 years. That would leave only 8 years left on the loan repayment. This is about redirecting resources to try to the expansion of the district and get this project built.
Representative Walters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Mayor. I'm just wondering, can you remind me, you had a $48 million loan, but what was the actual amount that the city has contributed towards the project over the years? I want that above and beyond the $48 million. How much has the city of St. Paul actually put in towards the construction of this? What's their match?
I'm going to ask Ms. Kelly to come up from our finance office to give you an exact figure so that I'm not misleading you.
If I might get some clarification from the Representative Welty, do you mean how much have we paid back of the loan, or how much have we invested in this entire
city of St. Paul's actual contribution? Ms. Kelly, would you care to come up?
I would add, Mr. Chair, that the total construction costs of this facility were $130 million. Actually exceeded that, although the Wild picked up the additional cost of that. And I think the Wild have paid are obligated to pay $65 million. The other $65 million was this loan payment, or this loan to the city of St. Paul.
Kelly, you have anything to add on that?
Mr. Chair, Margaret Kelly, Finance Director for the City of St. Paul. I don't think I have anything to add to what the mayor said. The city's contribution, to my knowledge, has been the loan repayment.
Representative Wells, please.
Okay. So I just need clarification on this. So the Wild was supposedly, they put in $65 million. You had the loan of $65 million? $48 million? I need this to be very clear.
Mayor, Mr. Chair, Representative, again, the initial construction costs were slated to be $130 million. The Wild was responsible for $65 million plus any additional costs that were incurred, and there were to the tune of many millions of dollars additional costs that the Wild picked up. So they have, and then the other half of that was the $65 million. 17 of it, which was the forgivable portion, and I think that it had a lot to do with amateur athletics and some accessibility for the building. I don't recall the specific details of that, but the $48 million is the loan portion that the city has been repaying.
Okay. Mr. Chair, and to the mayor and to others, I just hope that we take into account this project and look back at the history of what other communities are doing when they are looking at regional event centers and what they're putting in. Some of the local communities are levying sales taxes or different taxes in order to pay for a portion of the construction of their facilities. They weren't given a loan. They weren't given a loan that they're coming back and asking for forgiveness on. And so I think as we move forward on this, we need to be careful that we don't set a precedent that we don't want to go down a road on and have that as a precedent in the future. We have to make sure that what we do is fair for many communities around the state as possible.
Mr. Chair, yes. Representative, I appreciate that concern. However, I think the precedent goes the other way in this instance. On the River Center facility itself, we are paying that through a local option sales tax, the half-cent sales tax that is going for that facility. This was different than that. While other facilities around the state of Minnesota, almost to my knowledge, every facility of this nature in the state of Minnesota has received direct state aid. This was the only facility that was done without it.
Well, Mr. Chair, that was to add to the, or you don't, never like to correct your mayor. There are a few instances in the state where they have not gotten state money, but just in a quick list that I did up to, I asked research to kind of send me something, and they sent it about 15 minutes later. There's about 25 or 30 event centers that the state has either given, pretty much paid for, or made substantial grants, and I don't know the exact match, whether it was $1 to $1 or $1 to $20. We'd certainly get that for you and share it with the committee. Okay. But it's
Representative McFarland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Forgive me if I missed it because I had to come in a little late, but where is the proposed location of the pond?
Representative Mahoney.
Well, Mr. Chair and committee members, in your packet, I think it's the second page back, it is right across from the Holiday Inn and right across from the XL Center. So it's kind of in that vacant lot that CNN used this summer for the Republican National Convention.
Representative Anderson again.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe staff can help me out on this. This is an interest-free loan. What would the interest have been over these years? Is that something that you have to get back to me on, or?
Mr. Burke, can you get back to where
I'm? Mr. Chair, we'll have to get back to
you. Okay. I'm sure it'd be a bunch of money. Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to make a comment. I'm going to vote against this. While it's very creative, I think if there's one thing that we've all borne the brunt of in the last 2 years is extreme creativity in the financial sector. And this, in my mind, just kind of reeks of the same kind of creativity that we saw in other sectors of our economy. And I guess if the City of St. Paul wants to come forward with another bonding request and fund this pond, I think that would be a legitimate consideration that the committee could certainly hear and give consideration to. But at this point, we're asking for us as a state to offer bailout package, and I think we're all a little tired of bailout packages, and I said the city of St. Paul should honor their loan. It was a good deal. Nobody forced them into it in the first place, and if the pond is a legitimate project, it warrants our consideration to come back with a separate bonding proposal for that. Thank you.
Hey, Mayor, do you want to respond to that, or Mr. Mahoney?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Well, members, we're going to move this on if the votes are there to finance, and it'll be re-referred from there to...
Mr. Chair, did you want to...
Bonding fine. Oh, no, excuse me. You want this to stay with us.
I think it should just stay with you.
Okay, well, Representative Downing, we'll have this discussion, I guess.
That way I can answer all those questions at a later date when I get that information.
Representative Mahoney then renews his motion that House... we didn't have vote on the amendment yet. If you all recall the deletion and the oral amendment, all those in favor, if you have a say, aye.
Aye.
Opposed. That motion prevails, and Representative Mahoney renews his motion. And House File 1263 be recommended to pass as amended and held over for possible inclusion in the...
Mr. Chair, if
finance.
The tax chair does request it even after that deletion, certainly make the motion on the House floor.
Okay. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails. Representative Kalin, House File 680, and Representative Mahoney move House File 680 be recommended to pass and re-refer to the full Finance Committee. And Representative Obermiller moves the A7 amendment. All those... Representative, I'll make an oral amendment to the on line 1.9, delete utility companies and insert utilities. Is that, Ms. Newman, the correct word that should be there? Okay. So Representative Obermiller moves the A7 amendment as amended. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Welcome, Representative Kalin.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. House File 680 is one of the...
Members, you have a fresh copy of the bill, too, that the fourth engrossment, it's got the House File number at the top in bold letters with no regular House of Representatives on it. Do you find it there, everybody? Okay, go ahead, Representative. Okay.
Thank you very much, Chair Rukavina. House File 680 is one of several green jobs bills that you'll see come before this committee, I hope, this session. And its prime purpose is to establish a framework for the investment of the federal recovery dollars in three key areas. The first is the weatherization of low-income homes. The second is the state energy program dollars invested in renovating our public buildings at the local government, school district, and state government levels. And then the third is to remove the barriers and address any of the bottlenecks for training that could hold up the quick delivery of those funds and the quick hiring of Minnesotans. Hopefully replacing unemployment checks with paychecks and making our economy and our government buildings more efficient. Today in the audience are representatives from the skilled trades unions. We've welcomed Mr. King and Louis King from the Summit Academy Opportunities Industrialization Centers and many of the students who are here with us. Anderson and Marvin Windows are here, the Office of Energy Security, the Builders Association of Minnesota, Minnesota Multi-Housing Association. I apologize to anyone else that I might have not seen. I see the realtors are here as well. As you can tell, Mr. Chair, there are a lot of folks that are eager to get Minnesotans back to work and see these jobs as one of the fastest ways to do so. Very quickly, we are probably getting quite sick of the term shovel-ready. At this point, that term doesn't even apply to these energy efficiency jobs because we don't have to break ground. The buildings are already built. We need wrenches and tool-ready jobs, and that's what these jobs are. The Community Action Association that's also here, and I'm sorry, I didn't recognize them as well, that runs the weatherization program today, has said that within 28 days of the signature, governor's signature on this bill, they can be hiring new crews and more folks. The same is true with our electricians, who can be in our city halls and in our state capitol even, replacing inefficient lighting. And we are working very closely with TEED, with MinSCU, with MHSA, with our private partners, many of whom are here today, to make sure that we address all those needs. I think the Section 7 and 8 are those that we focused on in Chair Mahoney's committee.
Representative Kalin, walk through the whole thing.
I'm happy to do so, Mr. Chair. The Section 1 is a revolving loan fund that is the current framework. We're working with the Office of Energy Security to make sure that it works, to ensure that as we ramp up and deal with what we know so far is $186 million for 15 or 18 months, we want to make sure that that activity doesn't just all go away, but that we can leverage those federal funds to keep doing more work, and that's what the revolving loan fund will do. Section 2 is the general principles for the Office of Energy Security, working with the agencies that are listed on lines 1.2, 3, and 4 of the amendment, to ensure that we're focused on job creation, energy conservation, leveraging other funds, and geographic distribution around the state, as well as making sure that we're not handing out Minnesota Care applications along with job applications, that these are good, high-paying jobs that can actually revive our economy, not worsen, not make worse our state budget deficit. Section 3 is the weatherization program. We just got word from the Vice President this morning that the total coming to the state is $131,937,000 and change. Currently, the amount coming to the state is roughly $10 million a year. So we're talking about a significant 12 to 13-fold increase in funding. As you know, Mr. Chair, there are 400,000 Minnesota households that are income eligible for low-income heating assistance. Because of limitation of funds, we can only serve 165,000 of those households, and we only weatherize 3,800 of those houses every year. It would take us a century at the rate we've been going. This 12 to 13-fold increase will move that number from 3,800 to anywhere from a conservative estimate of 12,000 homes to anywhere close to 25,000, depending on the final structuring of the individual programs by the community action agencies. We're also focusing on expanding beyond the traditional emphasis on single-family residences, but also to include rental units. It's something that I know the department and the community action agencies have been focused on, but I believe that this infusion of new funds will help do that more quickly. Sections 4 and 5 go together. They leverage a local and a state version of a bill that we passed last year, the tax-exempt lease purchase financing program, that allows the energy savings over the payback period of that investment to pay for the upfront capital investment. So in other words, if you have an $80,000 furnace that you're replacing, it's an $80,000 cost for a high-efficiency furnace, the payback period is 4 years.
Excuse me, Representative Norness, did you want to question specific?
When the testimony's done, I don't have to.
Okay. I can, go ahead,
Representative. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for your patience, Representative Norness. On that tax-exempt lease purchase mechanism, the school district or the city hall or the state government will pay the same utility bill after the improvements until the end of the payback period, because the energy savings themselves over the course of that payback period pay for the investment up front. We have been working closely with the school districts. We'll be having an informational hearing this afternoon in the K-12 Finance Committee to provide some flexibility for those districts that are willing to jumpstart their projects during the time of the federal recovery dollars that will allow the federal dollars to actually reduce that energy bill, so to actually achieve real savings over the course of that payback period
or to shorten the period of payback at which point they drop down to the true energy savings, so that lower improved energy bill amount. The fastest way that we can deliver these programs will be through recommissioning, which involves a bunch of engineers coming into buildings and really doing a rigorous analysis, making sure the building is working as designed. Electricians coming in and replacing our lighting. And then we've also looked at some other major cost-effective projects that could be done immediately. For instance, furnaces that have already been engineered, major heating and cooling plants for pipefitters and plumbers and sheet metal workers. Section 6 is looking to leverage the federal weatherization dollars. The formula currently that requires the immediate cost effectiveness cannot be used for windows for the weatherization dollars. So we're looking at how can we make sure that if we're going into a home once or going into a building once, that we do as much as we can all at once. And I know that Anderson and Marvin Windows have been willing partners to figure out how we can cost effectively deliver those windows and install them. You know, Mr. Chair, every window that we can purchase here in Minnesota means that some of the hundreds of folks laid off from Anderson Windows can be called back. And I think ultimately we can see the fastest recovery in our economy if we can figure out this window augmentation program. Section 7 is the training and workforce development section that we focused on in Chair Mahoney's division. And I just want to highlight the need here for training. If we're going to be moving from 3,800 weatherized homes a year to upwards of 15 to 20,000, we're going to need to hire hundreds more energy auditors, anywhere from 300 to 400 new home energy auditors. It's a 5 to 6 day training currently. We're working to expand that to a 2 week training. But if we don't have an assessment of the challenges and the leaks and insulation needs of a home, we can't actually hire folks to get in there and do the insulation, to do the caulking, to tighten up those buildings. And we also need, on our public buildings, we need greater capacity for certified energy managers and others who really know how to get into a building and do the comprehensive diagnosis. Section 8 is the accountability and transparency reporting provisions of the bill, ensuring that the funds that are invested actually result in job creation, in energy savings, in good-paying jobs, in leveraged non-stimulus funds, and that the work is happening all over the state of Minnesota. That's the bill, Mr. Chair. Appreciate your patience walking through it, and stand for any questions.
Representative Norner.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Kalin. I just had, I guess, two questions. One, you talked about being tool-ready. I think you used that term, but is there an actual list somewhere of all of the things that are needed to be done? And then also in the bill, it talks about geographically somehow making this fair across the state. Number one is there, do we know, you know, where we start and what needs to be done? And also, how does that geographically distributed part, how is that intended to work?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Norris, both of those are good questions that we've been working on. This broad coalition is working on the bill. Early in January, as the recovery bill was being drafted in Congress, I know the Department of Education, just to take the schools for one example, the Department of Education and the Superintendents Association, Charlie Kites Group, both put out feelers for projects that could be done on any kind of capital. The very first week, the list was in the over $300 million worth of projects. I then went through and with the Office of Energy Security just did a first pass on those and found tens of millions of dollars of already engineered energy efficiency and conservation projects. Our challenge is then to make sure that we aren't just doing a first-come, first-serve. That it doesn't all happen in the metro area, or it doesn't all happen out in Curtis, but it happens around the state. That's actually one reason why the training component has, why we require the recruitment and outreach and the existing capacity, is because working with MNSCU, working with our
our OICs, the trade unions around the state as well are doing this on their own dime without any state dollars. And the community action partnerships, I believe that there are 32 of them around the state, geographically distributed by region. So that's a key component, I think, to use that already dispersed infrastructure so we can do this quickly. Thank you very much. Mr. Chair, one more follow-up.
Go ahead.
Actually, a related question, I guess. We're talking about good-paying jobs, and I think that's very important. You know, through all this, we need to be able to do that. My question is who is establishing, you know, what is the rate of pay that we're going to pay these? And I know there's different types of jobs, and so therein is another, I guess, concern, but how are we going to make sure that these jobs are what you'd say good-paying jobs? Are we using the minimum wage, or what are we using?
If I'm not mistaken, in the federal stimulus package, there's references to prevailing wage, and maybe Ms. Newman can talk about that, but so we already have our Department of Labor and Industry that makes sure that prevailing wages are being paid, and I assume that they will enforce this then, and there are prevailing wages for the different trades, et cetera. So these will be, you know, comparable to construction trades, or at least prevailing wage that's paid in those regions. Am I wrong?
Mr. Chair, you're correct, and I'll just direct folks to Section 606 of the federal bill.
Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Kalin. Just as we know, any stimulus money is a one-time money. Now, what guarantees that these funds are going to last and complete the projects? And if they don't, then what?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Detmer. The bulk of the funds, $131 million plus weatherization dollars, those are very quick projects. The maximum is $6,500 under the new formula for the federal dollars. The longer-term projects are that I'm a little bit more concerned about, where I've asked the question, is on the public building. I believe the recovery bill, and perhaps staff can confirm this, that the rules are that the dollars have to be obligated within 15 to 18 months. But the reality is that we will have far more projects. We already do have far more projects that are ready to be completed that have already been engineered, then we will have money to help seed up front. Representative Downey and I were talking briefly about the revolving loan fund in the bill to make sure that those projects, that the next wave of projects will continue to be funded through the return to energy savings. We're working out the details of that. But
Mr. Chair, could you kind of explain your term obligated? Could you explain that to us?
Go ahead, Representative.
Mr. Chair, I believe it means that the contract has been, has the project been bid and the contract's been let and signed.
Okay.
Okay, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kalin, I'm an average homeowner. How do I go about accessing these funds to improve energy efficiency in my home?
Representative Kalin, help her out here.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, your question currently is not addressed in the bill because of the restrictions of the federal dollars. But there, as this committee well knows, there's the Public Finance Authority uses credit enhancement projects for sewer and water and other projects. Anderson Windows and I have been talking about the fact that 6.1% interest rate for homeowners like you or I isn't competitive today. So if we can find a way to lower interest loans and other packages, we're working on that. I don't think that ultimately the Section 6 as written will be what comes out of the Energy Finance Committee next week or the week after, because we need to continue to address that issue.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. I look forward to kind of seeing that piece of things. I also had another question. I was looking at these whole sections. You've got in Section 1, it talks about, you know, putting aside 30% of the energy savings. But then when you get back to Section 4, local government units and school districts buildings, they also have to put up 60% of the project's funding. So when they're putting 30%, does that 30% apply to them in putting in energy savings? And if so, what is the cost going to be for them overall if they have to put the 30% into a savings account from their energy savings, and they also have to put up the 60% for funding the project?
Mr. Chair, the 30% requirement would only apply to the federal recovery dollars portion, so that would be 30% of 40%, ends up being 12%. Currently, under that existing tax-exempt lease purchase program, where the energy savings, the electric bill or the utility bill stays static, but the energy savings as a result of the project pay for that upfront project, the federal dollars would allow local schools to actually lower their utility bills during the payback period, that cost share, but only the point of 60%, making sure we have local skin in the game so that there's real incentive to not just get a check and spend it, but to even more incentive to make sure it's wisely invested. Only that 40% of the reduction would then be required to go into this revolving loan fund. I have heard from school districts and the cities that this may be more complex than we need to make it, and I know the Office of Energy Security is deliberating on how we can obligate to go to the next layer of projects without having to do complex accounting that might be a disincentive. So I'm open to figuring out a way that we can make sure that works right and elegantly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Mahoney.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not sure if this question goes to the author of the bill or the chair, but in the amendment on page 5 of the bill, line 24, you deleted bioscience and, which would lead me to believe that the report is not going down to the division of the policy of your policy committee, and I just would like some assurances from the department or from the chair that report will be shared with my committee, because we're having so much difficulty trying to get our arms around what workforce is, the training and the results.
Mr. Representative Mahoney, no, because it says with jurisdiction over energy, finance, and workforce development would probably go to your subcommittee before it comes up to the full committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
But we don't have a full finance committee, or it can encompass both of our committees. Representative Eastman, I wasn't out to get you, Mahoney.
Just so you know. I was worried for it.
If I was, I wouldn't have made it that obvious. Representative Eastman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kaelin, on the weatherization, you mentioned something a minute ago. I just kind of brought this to my attention. You said there's a maximum amount that can be allocated, $6,000 or something. You said something like, is that kind of per unit or per house? Or?
Representative Kaelin.
Mr. Chair, Representative Eastman, I believe the previous amount was $5,000, but $3,500. There are some other smaller funds. The folks who run these programs at those community action agencies are really savvy about how to make it easy for the homeowner, but to leverage funds. So I think the average investment was about $4,000 a home. That can go up now to just on the weatherization dollars to $6,500 per home.
Okay, Mr. Chair,
go ahead.
I'm just curious what the average job costs. I mean, I just look at today's prices. If we're looking at windows and higher efficiency furnaces and insulation, I mean, do they just do as much as they can, and then can they requalify for another project at some point in time to finish the job, or what is the process for that? Is there any limit to the amount of times that a place can qualify for this kind of funding?
Mr. Chair, Representative Eastman, the home cannot be weatherized if it has been addressed within the previous 15 years. I think it's the rule, and as well as the $6,500 is there are real restrictions on what it can be used as a direct energy project. So often it is upgrading to a more efficient furnace, and like I said before, the windows do not, because they're a longer payback period. They do not qualify under the very strict formula for the federal dollars. Windows are expensive, even at at the lower price per unit, lower price points. And so that's been the conversation we've been having, is how quickly do we want to stretch the state energy, the $54 million of state energy program dollars. We could exhaust all of it in windows for to go with the weatherization program. I don't think that's what the dollars are really meant to be used for entirely. So we're trying to figure out how we can make that work.
Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think this is a question for Mr. Chairman. I'm just curious. I'm starting to try to figure out the whole stimulus money that's coming to the state. How many other bills are we going to have that require that we'll be using stimulus money? And is there already a date set where we have to pass these on the floor? Or I'm just curious.
Representative Detmer, we will have in higher education part of our finance omnibus bill. We'll have a considerable amount of money. We're not sure yet what that split, but see, Mr. Berg could give us somewhat of an idea. Also, the Department of Employment and Economic Development will have a considerable sum of money into their different categories. You've seen the unemployment insurance, administrative money that's coming through here, the Wagner Prize money that we're putting one individual in each workforce center with, or they promise to use it. There are a number of programs dealing with youth and unemployed adults and that we'll be hopefully able to direct that money to the way the committee sees fit. I can't give you a dollar amount. Maybe Mr. Burke can give you an estimate of what we think might come through this committee. Do you have it? We don't know yet. Everything's in flux out there. How about a ballpark for you? A couple? A quarter of a billion?
Mr. Chairman, I can't tell you anything more than stay tuned. There is, you heard the Commissioner of Employment and Economic Development talk about the money that was there that was relatively well defined at this point. I don't know the number right off the top of my head, but the stuff that the Chairman was talking about. On the higher ed side, it's yet to be decided. There is what's called the state fiscal stabilization pool in the bill, which 81% of has to be spent on educational purposes at all levels, and that amounts to $668 million that the state would have. How that gets allocated amongst various parts of education is something that isn't decided yet. And I guess I would say generally, and there's lots of other committees that are going to be dealing with this, under state law, the governor's got to make it, well, both under the federal law, the governor has got to make an application to get the money. And the governor also has to send over information to the legislature that he wants to expend new dollars that are coming in. So there's going to be a two-step process there where the governor asks the feds for the money and he tells the legislature, here's new money that we're going to get and here's how I want to spend it. Then the legislature, and he has to do that, I believe it's 20 days before our committee deadline.
Wow. And then we get to say, well, yeah, we agree with you a little bit maybe, but here's what we want to do.
And Mr. Chairman, there's maintenance of effort on some of this money too, I'm sure.
On the education side of it, there is...
Mr. Chairman, Representative Detmer, there are all sorts of different strings on different parts of the stimulus package, yeah.
Representative Anderson, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kalin, I saw a couple of terms in here. I'm not familiar with them, and I'm wondering if it's part of the federal guidelines again, or if this is something that's actually defined in state law. And it's the energy auditor and energy managers. What are those? What is that?
Mr. Chair, the energy auditor is the job duty that is in some ways a term of art, but a residential energy manager is actually currently being trained at Dunwoody. They won the competitive bid that the Office of Energy Security put out for residential energy auditors. The energy manager is growing to be a term of art within the engineering community. The American Society of Energy Engineers runs the Certified Energy Manager program. You have to have either a professional degree or a significant number of years of experience. As an architecture school dropout myself, not an architect, I actually would have to have, I think, either 8 or 10 years of experience to even be able to sit for the exam to become a certified energy manager. So it's pretty rigorous.
Representative Eastman.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson.
I'm sorry. So what is their role in all of this? What exactly are they going to be doing? Are they going to say you can only use this amount of energy, or what is...
Go ahead,
Mr. Chair.
No,
if you want to speak to me,
I'll go ahead. Mr. Taylor, you tell her what you intend to do with her. I'm trying to still figure out what the Office of Energy Security is. I want somebody to stand up from the office because I want to see if Vladimir Putin is over there. It sounds like something from the old Soviet Union. So go ahead, Representative.
Mr. Chair, as I said before, the residential energy auditor does the initial assessment. What they do is actually put in a blower door and run a fan through the home, and then you can actually do a little smoke test to find where the big leaks are in the house, and you take out a clock gun, and then you can do infrared cameras to figure out where insulation has been improperly or actually just missing or has moved. The certified energy managers will actually do diagnostic testing of the control system, of the mechanical system, of the furnace or boiler themselves. That work, and then actually similar to our cars, I can't work on my car. It's far too complex. You need to have about 6 computers plugged in to figure them out. That's what the certified energy managers do.
Members, I'm going to call down Mr. Lewis King, who wanted to testify on the bill before we get out of time, and then we'll continue on with other questions. Representative Downey. Mr. King, welcome to the committee, and you can tell us how much you support it or if you've got some ideas to fix it up or whatever. Welcome, and just identify yourself.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, committee members. I'm Lewis King, President and CEO of Summit Academy OIC, and also co-chair of HIRE Minnesota. HIRE is an acronym for Healthcare Infrastructure and Renewable Energy. My co-chair is Mr. Will Seeger. Some of you will be familiar with him. He is an American hero, environmentalist, and Arctic explorer. I'm here today on behalf of the coalition to express our support for this bill, and to also say that we are committed to working to ensure that all Minnesotans are engaged in making our state a more efficient state and also making our economy a better state. And the people that you see here today are the delivery arm of our coalition. These are members of the 100 Hard Hats training program. Some of them will be weatherization people, others will be plumbers, electricians, and yesterday we met with the 49ers to begin a highway heavy division, so we have the test and soaring with MnDOT as well. Many of our students come from low-income areas where unemployment has been as high as 14% and poverty ranges as high as 45%. And we want to ensure that the authors of this bill and the representatives here and senators at the Capitol understand that it is our full intent to be full parties in the benefits of this stimulus package and also in kicking our economy off. And finally, I'd like to say this. We believe the best social service program in the world is a job. And many of you will leave this room today and engage in other discussions about cutting social programs. We're here today with people who want to become taxpayers, who want to make our community a better place, and who want to work for a living. We also are very interested in the discussion about wages. We believe in prevailing wages. We believe that the jobs have got to pay enough to take care of the families. As a note, the average person coming to Summit earned $5,000 in the previous period, and because of our participation in such projects as PCF Stadium and the Twin Stadium, our people can earn over $40,000 a year, taking them from receiving social aid, becoming taxpayers, and making our tax base even stronger. I thank you for your support, and I look forward to working with you in the future.
Thank you, Mr. King. Any questions for Mr. King? Okay. Representative Downey now. Thank you, Mr. King.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to let you know that the director of the Office of Energy Security is one of my constituents from Edina, and he loves the Iron Range, so you can have 100% confidence in him.
He didn't stand up when I asked. Where's the representative from the Office of Energy Security? Is this the lady from Edina here?
No.
Uh-oh. Okay. So you're kind of BSing me then. I don't know.
He does exist.
Okay. Representative Kalin, just a few questions now. You said $131 million coming into the stimulus package just for this? What your estimate is for this program?
Mr. Chair, the weatherization alone is
131.9. Okay.
The state energy program is just over 54.
So what is the amount of money that the Office of Energy Security has had to use in the past? It's a recently established department, is it not?
Mr. Chair, it's actually been... It encompasses more than just the State Energy Office, but it's within the Department of Commerce. It was renamed by executive order, I believe, by Governor Pawlenty. But they roughly average about $10 million a year now for the weatherization program up. And actually, the State Energy Program, the most recent number was $719,000. Now it's $54
million. So with the amount of money they've got to kick out and... you know, that's quite a significant amount of new money.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of mandates in here, and I know how fast you want this money to get out into the public, but, you know, everywhere I look, they're developing, the State Energy Office of Energy Security is developing an action plan to extend the stimulus consistent with this section. It's got to have an application procedure mm-hmm. for funding. There's other formula, including development procedures. How much of this is going to end up in administration and one-time spending? And then it seems to me you're setting up a pretty good-sized revolving loan fund here. So do you have estimates of what those amounts are?
Mr. Chair, I'll work backwards to your questions there. The revolving loan fund estimate, we don't know yet, I think because of the questions that I've addressed earlier that have come up about what's the most efficient way to make sure that we're doing beyond just the one-time stimulus dollars. Most of what the joint plan and joint procedures that you referred to are actually, that are referred to in the bill are existing developing partnerships. I just can't say enough about the Office of Energy Security and their own proactive work to work and increase their partnerships with DEED and MNSCU and Department Administration and others. And so I think most of that is ongoing today. I will note, Mr. Chair, that TUSA administration piece in Representative Kahn's State Government Finance Committee, we've been looking at internal controls and auditing and control of money. The Department of Commerce procedures have been recognized as one of the best, if not the best, in the state, in state agencies. I think the term we use often is that they are very buttoned up. And so I have a great amount of confidence that the procedures will work extremely well and the money will be well spent.
Is there, are there any other questions then regarding the bill? Representative Eastman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kalin, I got a couple of questions. One, in the bill, I mean, you're obviously referring to the stimulus dollars all throughout the bill, and there's a number of new programs and new things that are kind of put together. Is this bill referring to the stimulus dollars that are coming in the package that we currently have, or is this obligated to take stimulus dollars in the future? What obligations do we have as a state to fund these programs and to take stimulus dollars that we would get in the future and put them into these programs? Is there any way you could let us know the impact of that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Eastman, two things. One is it is restricted to the stimulus dollars themselves, so we are being very careful not to obligate either new FTEs, you know, new state employees that aren't, won't be able to be supported beyond the life of the funds. Number two, we've been also very, very careful, other than the Windows component that we're still working on, they're all existing channels. So the tax exempt purchase financing mechanism and the weatherization program and nearly all the training, there may be one or two small components of training that are not being done in Minnesota that are being done elsewhere. So it's all existing programs so we can deliver this quickly.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
So if there were additional stimulus dollars allocated in the future from the federal government, would they automatically flow into this program, this language?
Representative Kalin.
Mr. Chair, Representative Eastman, I don't know, but I will work with our fiscal staff on the Energy Committee specifically where the money will be allocated and get back to you with that answer.
And one final question, Mr. Chair.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I think it's interesting, and there's probably a good answer to this, and there's a good way to monitor and audit this, but I mean, it's easy to make projections about energy efficiencies that we're going to achieve. Do we ever go back and audit our work
and find out if, in fact, we achieve the energy levels that we're saying we're funding? Just interesting question.
Mr. Chair, Representative Eastman, yes, we do. It's called measurement and verification. It's usually a post-occupancy commission is what it's called. I'll make sure that someone from the Office of Energy Security or the Center for Energy and Environment can provide very detailed examples of that for you.
Representative Kalin, I'm still a little, you know, puzzled as to how any little division that had $700,000, you said last year, is going to be able to administratively handle about seems to be about $185 million, if you $185 million from $700,000. But I don't know if there are administrative. Is there a restriction here on the amount of money that can, because I know you want it to go out to the project, so is there some type of administrative ceiling as far as what they can use?
Mr. Chair, the I think total ceiling for the weatherization is generally 10% for training and admin. I think they bumped it up 20%, but I'm going to be proposing that we put a similar cap on it, but I think we shouldn't even be anywhere close to that.
Representative Taylor, that's to the cap agencies itself, right? Or well, back to the Office of Energy Security, too.
There's two pots of money. We're talking about 131 plus, essentially 132.
The weatherization.
That are going to go to the cap.
And that's just going to be passed through.
It's passed through dollars. We barely get to say bye-bye to it.
Okay.
We get to make sure it's run well.
And then the $54 million.
And the $54 million. We are going to be focusing entirely on program delivery with the $54 million. We may have to do, and I think you see in the bill, providing the Office of Energy Security the opportunity to do to hire appropriate consultants or contractors, on lines 3.14 to 3.16 to plan and track the procurement and the investment of those dollars. But we're not just going to hand over to OES the ability to do that. That's the Section 8 reporting, because we will be holding their feet to the fire to make sure that we're putting people to work on projects, not running red tape and paperwork.
Okay. Representative Anderson. Anybody else in the audience want to talk for or against it? If not, then Representative Kalin renews his motion. Motion at all. That was Representative... Who made that?
Overmuller, I believe.
Who moved it for him? Help me out. I think somebody already moved. Representative Clark. Excuse me. Representative Mahoney moved it initially. Representative Mahoney moves House File 680 as amended. He recommended the pass and re-referred to finance, and then it'll be referred there to energy finance. Any other questions? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Okay, members, I could do my bill real quickly, I believe. Oh, we took that part out. Mr. Chair,
go ahead, Mr. Chair.
And move House 1323 be recommended to pass and re-refer to finance and the capital bond and finance. And members, this is a request for $255,000 for the White Lakes water system. Their water system is now built in the early 1950s, which was state of the art then, but the community is looking for this help. Their filter control system is getting old and ready to break, and they're going to be, it's about a $600,000 total project just for the filter controls, and so it would be matched a little better than one-to-one for the bonding money.
Does anyone have any questions? Representative Anderson?
Just one question.
It's got regional importance.
No, that's not it either. You're just wrong. If I'm remembering correctly, PFA always has like a priority list. Where does this land on those?
They have talked to the PFA. They've just put this in recently, and they have hired a city engineer, I think, or engineering firm, so I think it is. And they've been talking to Ms. Johnson over there, I believe. But right now it isn't on that priority list, although they're a little nervous about the whole system. And it's been using a lot. This would save quite a bit of energy, too, from what I was told by city managers.
Any other questions? Seeing none, the Brookavina renews his motion that House File 1323 be recommended to pass and referred to finance with reference to the capital investment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Let's see. Hawes, will you do a motion to approve the minutes?
I do. They're very nice minutes.
Okay. All those in favor of approving the minutes, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Minutes are approved. I believe without any further business, we are adjourned.